Hey everybody, welcome to Mind Your... What are you doing over there? Welcome to Mind Your Hive's Beekeeping Podcast. This is episode 13. I think I'm right on that. I listened to an old episode not that long ago, and I was like, I said the wrong episode number on this. I'm here with my lovely wife, Kara Jo.
Hello, hello.
What's the date? It's March
12th, 11th? I think.
12th, March 12th.
Yep.
Yeah, it's the afternoon. It's snowing outside. It's like, I don't want to say it's a freak storm, but like, you know, it's March, so you never know what's going to happen.
It's really close to the afternoon. It's kind of morning afternoon.
Oh, wait, is it still morning?
No, it's not.
No, it's afternoon. It's close. I am nursing a jacked up ankle.
A bad jacked up ankle.
Yeah, I sprained my ankle really bad playing basketball. Ugh. I'm an idiot.
You should be playing old man basketball, and he was playing like 18-year-old, 20-year-old basketball.
Yeah, whatever. But jacked up my, our buddy Steve Wilde just texted.
Is it a beekeeping question? It has to do with beekeeping,
totally. But the reason I'm saying it is I started doing bee venom therapy, BVT, on my ankle. I did it last year on my knee. It was, for my knee, it was like, scar tissue and just long-term trauma on that knee, and it was really positive results.
Do you still feel the results of that?
I think so, yeah. Wow. I mean, I think it cleaned up a bunch of crap in my knee.
I don't hear you complain about your knee like you used to.
And there's times where I'm like, oh, maybe I should do some shots in my knee. And then before I end up actually doing it, I'm like, oh, actually my knee's feeling pretty good. I just had a bad day. Where before
it was all the time, it was constant.
Yeah, it was never a good day.
It was the way you walked around, it was the way you got up.
No doubt. Wow. So yeah, I started doing BVT. I've been posting some gross pictures on the on our Instagram.
Of his feet and toes.
I mean, it's my ankle and it's like all bruised and just my toes are all bruised. I think it's just funny posting the pictures more than anything.
I don't know if anybody wants to see your non-bruised toes either. Yeah. Let's
no.
keep that ew. Between us.
I don't want you to see them even. But no, it does spark like really some fascinating conversations and like, you know, people joking around, but also just, the dogs are really playing loudly over there. What, they just decided to wake up? Oh my goodness. Whatever. Chill out, homie. What was I saying? I was distracted
by BVT, and then
it sparked some really fun conversations. But it's fun. My buddy Sean said to me yesterday, he was like, hey, I woke up and my toe was kind of hurting. You think you could sting me? And I was like, no, man. It's like, it's not like that. He's like, oh, but I just read that like there's all these healing benefits to bee stings, and like it could even like help other parts of my body. And I was like, dude, why don't you? Just crushing water over there now too. Duncan is being very loud.
No, that's Kima.
Oh, good. I don't mind Kima drinks. but he's like, hey, my toe hurts. Can I sting it? And I was just like, not really, man. And I was trying to explain. So I said, hey, go back to our episode 3 and just listen to our podcast we did on bee venom therapy. Like, we got pretty deep, dirty into what it's all about. But I want to like clarify for people, I don't think of bee venom therapy as like a short term, hey, something hurts today, let me give it a little sting and then it'll help it. I think if anything, any comfort you're going to get from the bee venom is probably offset by the pain you get from the sting for something short term. But say like, he was like, hey man, my toes are arthritic and they're really acting up on me today. It would be like, cool. Talk to a doctor, blah, 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 blah. We're not medical professionals, but maybe BVT is a good thing for you to start doing, like, you know, continuously, not just like once every, you know, now and again.
And it is also important because I started having my allergy after BVT. Like, I was getting stung just beekeeping, and I started...
Minimally, though, because you were wearing gloves.
No, I wasn't wearing gloves. I went gloveless. Well,
you were wearing gloves, and then you went gloveless, and you started doing BVT.
So I started going gloveless, started getting stung, started having itching in my feet, in my feet a little bit.
In your privates.
Okay, stop jumping ahead.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know.
No, in the beginning, I started having itchy feet, and I remember you saying that's not good. That's like away from the sting site, that could be a problem. And then I went to BVT. So I should have heeded the warning signs. And it's just important, like, not everybody should be doing that. So when Greg was stinging his ankle, and what was that episode that we talked about my allergy? It was like 2 episodes ago or something like that.
11. Episode 11. Yeah.
11. So we talk about that, but I decided to sting myself and take the stinger right out as allergy kind of maintenance. And I've been doing that once a week to kind of get myself ready for the season.
So yeah, Kara's, I mean, you should listen to the episode, but she built up her tolerance again to bee stings, essentially, you know, started with like 0.001 percentage, whatever, like, you know, less than 1% of a typical volume of a bee sting, and then worked her way up to a full bee sting. And then before getting into beekeeping that we're going to be doing soon, it felt like a good idea to give yourself a test thing once a week and just make sure you're not having reactions. And
well, because so far, if so I good. Went to an allergist, that's what they would be doing. They'd be doing maintenance. So,
and you know,
I shouldn't have waited so long, but I did.
Yeah. And you know, always have an EpiPen, blah, 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 blah. Like stuff we're probably supposed to say. But yeah, that's going on. We just celebrated Kara's 40th birthday.
Sure did. Am I
allowed to say 40th? Is that a thing?
I don't care.
I just said it, but, I don't know. I suppose a milestone of sorts. I'm not for really sure. Like, I guess, I don't know. What's,
I feel another? Different. I feel like badass. Yeah. Like
you're a badass 40-year-old now.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
But we went to Hudson, New York. It's like totally our happy place.
One of our happy places.
Yeah. We love it up there. But what I was really happy. So we went to a couple pretty cool bars. Shout out to, and restaurants. Shout out Feast and Floret in Hudson is just
amazing.
Amazing.
That's like a fine dining place.
Yeah. But we went to a few other spots and we noticed that there is a trend in Hudson where they use honey simple syrup in their cocktails that I just wish I saw everywhere.
Yeah. Drank good food. I know. Drank good drinks and ate good food up there.
But yeah, I think hopefully next episode or, you know, sometime in the short term, a buddy of ours, Mike Landers, is going to come on and talk mixology, talk honey and cocktails. He is...
And plants and cocktails.
Yeah he's like fermentologist, mixologist. Like the dude just gets it. And I'm super excited to pick his brain. And he volunteered. He's like, hey, let's do this podcast.
Yeah, I'm excited for that, too.
We didn't even like have to convince him. I was like,
are we going to drink cocktails?
Yes.
The answer is yes.
So it's all right. It's mid-March.
Snowstorm.
It's snowing out right now. We're getting like 5 inches. We're in Pennsylvania. We're getting like 5 inches today, or give or take. But it's gnarly. I mean, it's like windy out there. It's like white out kind of, maybe not at this exact moment, but earlier today, big time. Which made me think, I have spent the last like 2 or 3 weeks convincing second year beekeepers and like, you know, young mentees of ours to not go in their hives yet. Just there's no need to go in. The only thing we do, and this is how I mentor, I just say, this is what I do. Like, you know, everybody has their different styles and nothing is black and white, and something you do in, I don't know, the way you set up your hives may lead you to open them up earlier. But our style, we don't crack them yet. And I look outside right now and I'm like, the reason we don't crack those boxes is because look at this crazy snowstorm outside. I'm glad I didn't want to introduce more moisture. I didn't want to crack the boxes. Like, this is why I want everything as sealed up as possible right now, is because look at this freak storm we're having. And that reminded Kara of Sue Hubble, a book by Sue Hubble.
Yeah, Book of Bees. I talk about it all the time. I love this book.
Yeah, you really do love that book.
Yeah. And
Sue Hubble's writing is so beautiful.
And also just, I mean, a fundamental beekeeper ideal, philosophy, just fact maybe, is don't beekeep by the calendar. Beekeep by nature. So
it's not black and white. It's not like this date of the calendar is the date that you do something.
Especially with climate change, everything is so wacky now. It's really a good rule of thumb. So anyway, Sue Hubble, who is now absconded, she's not with us anymore. She started beekeeping in 1973, and she operated like beekeeping and honey producing farm in the Ozark Mountains in southern Missouri. And she had like at the peak of her beekeeping, she had like 300 hives. So this book goes through like each season.
A book of bees. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, it goes through each season and talks about things. So, when she talks about the beekeeper's spring, I'm just going to read you like quick little excerpts. It says, spring for bees, and so for beekeepers as well, has nothing to do with the calendar.
And it literally, like, the chapter opens with that.
It opens with that.
Or it's like, okay, I get this.
And then she says, I am always too eager to start working with the bees in the spring. I miss them in the winter and want to be back with them again. But I sternly remind myself I can do more harm than good if I open their hives before the daffodils bloom. So when the crocuses flower around my cabin, I have to content myself with crouching down beside those purple, white, and yellow blossoms to watch the field bees gathering pollen.
And, you know, I mean, it depends on where you live, but I think seeing the signs of nature leading me to feeling comfortable about opening the boxes up and checking things out is how I want to do it. And I know I really like daffodils just started piercing through the snow. We just last week got snowdrops. By the way, I'm pretty sure it's snowdrops, but in Iceland, they call them snow piercers, which is just so much cooler because, you know, they pierce through snow.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Crocuses.
So I tend to, the snowdrops and the crocuses, I'm kind of like, I don't know. Daffodils, like once they're really fully out, it's like, okay, I think that's kind of game time. But you got to look at the forecast. Our mentees, a lot of them, listen, I'm not busting your balls here. This is like such a common thing where new beekeepers just want to go in their hives.
So do experienced beekeepers that have been beekeeping for 15 years.
Yeah. And I just hear them and I'm like, wow, whatever. Hey, teach their own. But, what was I saying? I got totally off track.
Going in the hives. I guess people wanted to go in the hives.
Yeah. What are you going to do? There's not really anything you can do right now.
You can check for like if you put sugar patties in to make sure they have food.
And that's what I say. I say crack the top. Look to make sure the sugar patty or fondant or whatever you're using as a reserve feed, which I recommend everybody does, make sure that they still have some. And then that's it. Don't go into the brood. Don't check anything else out. I'm not into it. But anyway, I had a bunch of people last week like, dude, it's 75 today. I'm going to go in the hives. I'm like, it's a low of 24 tomorrow. And then 20. And then let them do their thing. Make sure, take that opportunity to sit there and look at them, see them bringing in pollen, look around your yard, see if there's some plants, observe that way, but you don't need to go into their apartment.
Well, also I found from personal experience that observing the sounds and the sights of spring, I learned so much.
Oh my gosh.
So much. And the peepers are those little frogs in like wet areas. We're always in wet areas. And they're little tiny frogs and they're mating calls and they're my first real indication that it's getting to be warmer.
Yeah. But there's years where we don't hear any peepers. Yeah. Like it's weird like that. I do the other day, I looked at Kara, we got home from New York and we pull up and I go, peepers. And they were exciting. So loud. I was like, yes, we're so close.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the weather coming up and next week is like, you know, it starts or later this week, I should say, because it's Saturday. Mm-hmm. Next week, it's there's not a ton of lows below freezing. It's like high of 56, low of 40. So I'm starting to see that weather break where I think, hey, we could crack open boxes and do some autopsies and check things out soon, but I'm not ready to go like, hey, I think Wednesday's the day. I'm still like, let's see what the 10-day says in a few days.
Well, and I think it's also important to talk about like, okay, there's not much you can do, right?
Right.
But also, how can you hurt the hive as a whole by cracking the boxes?
Everything is risk-reward. Everything is risk-reward, and it's... Okay, so you're cracking open the boxes because you want to see whether they're still alive. You want to see what's going on. You want to feed your ego, so to speak. to pat yourself on the back that they survived winter.
I'm curious, like new beekeepers are just so curious.
Right.
They, especially if this is their first or second winter or it's their first time
having
bees go through, like make it through winter. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, we always say like when that first inspection, when you, your bees have survived, you go ahead and pop a bottle of champagne and celebrate first.
Or a bottle of beer, which I'm doing right now. What is this?
Oh, so this is called Earthly Pleasures. It is, so Suarez Family Brewery in Hudson, New York is like maybe my number one favorite brewery. I mean, I think they may, they might just do the best job making beer in the country. Love them. Really small spot. Dan Suarez and his wife, Tay, are just the best. But somebody that worked with them for a long time, Matt Moon, started his own brewery. So this is called Another Moon Brewing. And we were able to buy this at Suarez last weekend.
Oh, we got it at Suarez. That's
cool. Yeah, they're selling. I think they might be making it at a Suarez too, but it's a different brewery called Another Moon. Really Saison focused. Like everything is from the region that they're brewing in and just very local community center driven type brewery. So yeah, super cool. Really, really cool. Another Moon Brewing. Anyway.
All right. So you said you open a bottle of champagne. It's exciting.
Yeah. So it's something to celebrate. But really, like, that first day, that for those first inspections, like, you're going to learn a lot about how your bees overwintered. And you're going to learn a lot of finding some dead outs.
Wait, before you get into that, though, like, cracking the boxes, cracking the propolis, like, they seal up the boxes. Thing.
Yeah, you were asking, what are the bad things that can happen? Yeah, totally. So, sealing, the bees are, and not every bee does this. There's sometimes we go to crack boxes and they're not even sealed with propolis, but there's a lot of times they're really sealed. So, during the wintertime, the bees are going to try to block up any holes anywhere that air is getting in, and they're going to seal those spots with propolis. When you crack open the boxes, you're breaking that seal. So you're letting air in now, and you're, you know, messing up their space, which you don't want to do. Cause again, like right now it's like 30 mile an hour winds and snow blowing outside. Like I would like those hives to be very sealed. There's connector comb. So, and again, not every bee does this, but some hives you see it and some you don't, but they will build comb in between the boxes. And typically it's drone comb, but sometimes in the late fall, they'll store in those spots. And what that comb does is it really bridges the gap in between the boxes and makes the bees more comfortable to move their cluster up into a different box or down into a different box when they need to move to get stores. So, you know, tonight's low is 16 degrees. I'm not trying to mess up anything in that hive that is there to help them survive.
Because you can go into a hive and on a dead out and there was honey right next to them and they just didn't, they weren't able to make the jump.
You don't increase moisture in the hives yet. I mean, moisture really is this like fine, there's this balance of they need moisture, but they don't need moisture. And also with that bridge comb, I've noticed before when you open the boxes for that first time in the spring and it'll grab other comb and mess it up. And a lot of the comb it can mess up does have brood on it, does have eggs on it.
Yeah.
And those are precious cells this time of year. You want every one of those surviving. So, you know, again, I just delay it a little bit longer.
And I think I feel like we should have looked this up before, but I just thought of it now. Every time you inspect your hive, you're killing like,
yeah, it's like over 100 bees.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's like a lot of bees.
Which, you know, when you've got 70,000 bees in the middle of the summer, isn't that big a deal. But when you're coming out of spring, you're not trying to kill any of them.
Even when I was
not trying to ever kill them, but you know what I mean.
Even when I was in there, like checking on sugar patties, I was like,
I know, right?
Sorry.
But again, what are you going to do? You notice there's some problem. There's not really, you're not ordering a queen right now. Like, what's some queen coming from down south and going to sit in a 20 degree truck?
Yeah.
No, it's not happening. You're not going to want to steal from another hive to help a hive right now. That's just not a good idea. Hive that's surviving, let it survive. Don't steal its resources at this point. If you find a dead out, you know, maybe you do want to block the entrance of the dead out so other bees can't rob it because they may be getting robbing disease, bringing disease back with them. For the most part, I kind of know what our dead outs are from. I don't think it's foul brewed, you know, American or European. That's something I very much test for, or like, you know, I check for. And there's signs of like dysentery or nosema, which would be poop stains at the entrances. You know, I'm not seeing any of that. So I'm not like as concerned about robouts getting, you know, putting disease into another colony. I'm kind of like, hey, at least they're able to grab some stores in an early spring day where there's not nectar for them to forage, but they can go rob out a hive that I know was, you know, died because there was queen issues or died because of just mite loads overall made them weak in low numbers.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a balance, and that's up to you. I'm not trying to say to somebody, let them rob out your hives or not. You know, just be mindful of it.
And when you do, if you have a dead out, it's good to not just take it all apart and break it down, but really inspect it with like an observing eye on why are they dead and what happened here.
So let's get it. We'll get into dead outs in a second. Okay. A couple other things that we are starting to think about doing. Pollen feeders. So we haven't put out any pollen feeding, any substitute pollen or pollen feeders yet. But I think maybe like next week we might. And we've talked about this a couple times prior, but when you start putting pollen out for the bees, you want to keep it out. You don't want to give them a bunch of pollen and then stop. They're using that pollen to feed brood. So when they're stimulated when they get pollen to create more brood. So we haven't done it yet, but maybe next week we would put it out. But once you do put it out, you got to keep it out, and then you'll very much notice. I think last year or the year before when we did it, it was only out for less than a week, because in that week enough natural foraging was happening that they were ignoring the substitute pollen stuff.
Yeah, they flock to it, and then
they're just like, "Nah, we're good." And you know, like, "All right, cool, we're good." So we might start doing that soon. People have been asking, "Can I feed them syrup?" I do not feel comfortable feeding bees syrup, either 1-to-1 solution or 2-to-1 solution. I don't feel comfortable doing that this early in the spring. Again, it's that battle of moisture. So if you're giving them 1-to-1 syrup, that is going to get them to think there's a little bit of a flow going on, and then they'll start laying more eggs and, you know, raising more brood. I get it, but you're also introducing a lot of moisture. So that is moisture that they need to get rid of. That's moisture that's going to be in their stomachs. And again, you get like a 15 degree night all of a sudden, and you've increased this moisture level a certain percentage as a whole in the hive. They could be more likely to freeze.
And also they might not be able to have enough numbers to keep that brood warm if they're ramping up brood production.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's just like a waste of all of that.
Yeah. So there's so much energy and resources that go into raising brood. If you get them to raise too much too soon, and then it has a cold night, they can't keep it warm, that brood's going to die. And then they're going to have to use resources to clean out that brood. And like, you know, again, you just wasted so much precious energy that you don't need to.
What did you say earlier? Don't think you know more than nature. Just like kind of follow, try to stay in sync with nature, and you know, go in and, I don't know what the word is right now, but like interject when needed, but otherwise.
Yeah. So, oh my God, that, that reminds me, I've said it a couple times.
Here's Greg Heated.
Oh God, there's just people out there that are just so douchey. Oh, and it burns me up. So somebody posted a question in a forum that was like, hey, 2 of my 3 hives died this past year. I want to look into getting more local stock. I have a feeling that person got like packages or something, or, you know, just bees from down south that nobody in Pennsylvania should be getting, in my opinion. And he just put out there, hey, does anybody have a place that they recommend where I can get, bees? Great question.
This is Facebook, right?
Yeah, of course. So great question. Like, cool. That's like, you know, you see somebody that said, hey, my hives died, I want to try to get more local stock. Like, you want to encourage that beekeeper. This douchebag responds to that person with, well, if you had 2 hives die in your apiary, that means 21 of 23 hives in our neighborhood survived. All mine lived. It must be your fault. You're not doing mite tests right. All my bees survived. And I just wanted to be like, you are such a prick, dude. Nobody asked this. Nobody needed you to interject with your little humble brag. And it got me thinking.
Is that a humble brag?
Yeah, like all my hives survived.
Doesn't seem very humble, but okay.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. He's saying all my hives survived without really saying it. But yeah, exactly. He's a douche. Or he just doesn't know the words that come out of his mouth. But I wanted to say to him, like, it got me thinking, not every hive is going to survive. I don't know if I think every hive should survive. Unless you are really putting an effort into raising queens that have done well and overwintered, and you keep these queen lines going, or you're getting bees from a reputable source where you know where their queen lines are coming from, and you're monitoring for mites. There's bees that shouldn't survive in our climate, in our region. There's bees that are not as good at protecting themselves against disease, and there's bees that maybe should die. And I think it's hard to really say this, but I think if you have 20 out of 20 hives survived that don't have some, you know, lineage to them, you're probably over-treating your bees. And I get a lot of people they think that bees just need to live, but some bees don't need to live. And if you're 20 for 20, the way that I think this guy beekeeps, I think you're just
based upon his comment
and other comments and what I've seen from him, I think you're over-treating your hives. Now, I am a treat. We treat our hives. There's treatment-free beekeepers. We are not treatment-free. We treat in an organic manner. But my goal of it all is for the bees to do all that themselves, for us not to have to interject with oxalic acid or with, you know, whatever mite treatment we're using at the time. But I recognize that, like, there is a level of the bees need to also do this themselves in order to...
Yeah, survival is the fittest.
Survival of the fittest. And I think there's over-treating happening. So, you know, this guy might be all, hey, all my bees survived. But I look at it like, they probably shouldn't have, dude. Our apiary, we lost 3 hives, I think.
Yeah, but our apiary didn't survive because of other reasons.
And it was really because mite loads got out of control because we were out of commission for a few months because of Hurricane Ida and blah, blah, blah. But, like, you know, we can see why it happened. Yeah. We lost a crazy amount of foragers moving hives late in the season, blah, blah, blah. I was never expecting all those to survive, period. So, all right. Let's talk about dead outs, because I think that was like a really great, something that a lot of people can learn a lot from, especially as a beginner. And Kara even said this year, she was like, I'm going to take off work the first inspection just because I want to be able to do an autopsy on any of these hives.
If we don't do it over the weekend.
Yeah. But
it kind of just depends on the weather, really.
There is a dead out, it's like a little 3 or 4 page document that I've had for a little bit. Jennifer Lund, she's the main, I'm not even sure when this was made, but the Maine State apiarist, and she just made a little quick document called How to Autopsy a Hive. Search for it, Jennifer Lund, L-U-N-D, How to Autopsy a Hive. If you can't find it, email us at mindyourhives@gmail.com and mindyourhives@gmail. And I'll send you the Word doc. It's great. Super simple, but she kind of goes through, like, what's the deal with a dead out? And, I mean, first question
It's season by season, too.
Yeah, first question is, when did you last see the bees alive? If a dead out happens in the summertime, okay, you know there's queenless issues, starvation, you know, queenless issues is all kinds of stuff. You know, drone laying workers, blah, blah, blah. Starvation, maybe pesticides, maybe pests. But that's a summertime death, very different. Late fall, that's when you start seeing varroa disease that's spread by varroa mites, and disease that, because varroa mites are weakening your bees, they can't fight themselves. You're going to see that happen.
Even in we've seen, like, August seems to be kind of like a pivotal point. We've seen absconding.
Well, so what happens a lot of times is we see in August is we see hives requeening themselves, and then all of a sudden queen doesn't return from a mating flight. All of a sudden you have a queenless hive late summer. You try to battle to get them back, but those are such important bees being made in that August, September timeframe. Like, I think a lot of that has happened. Or August, there's such high mite loads that they're like, we're diseased, we need to abscond. Yes. They bounce. You know, obviously your hive is toast. But that's that late summer.
Yeah.
I mean, midsummer, late summer, like that's a very different dead out. Late fall, that's when you're seeing your bees actually die from disease caused again by mites sucking the life out of them. They can't fight for themselves. Maybe there was some type of issue. Maybe it's because of disease they're weakened, but they get robbed out. They get overtaken by other bees. Late fall, we've seen hives abscond in October. High mite load issues for sure. But those late falls are different. I think late fall is a lot of times like very much Varroa, Varroa, Varroa. That's when you're going to see deaths. Wintertime, you get past, you know, New Year's, you see bees flying around in a warm day in January. You're like, all right, you're kind of in that, what I consider the clear of, they were going to die from Varroa or lack of numbers. But now you really have to maintain moisture, like we've talked about over and over again. Maybe they have low numbers. So, you know, you got to make sure they have enough food. And you want them to exert as little energy as possible so they can spend their energy keeping themselves warm. But really, it's when they die of lack of stores. And that's why we always say make sure you have fondant or some type of sugar patty at the top, on the top, so they have some emergency feed to get to. But if I'm in, it's if it's February and I see that we have bees that are alive, I am like, unless they run out of food, I think we're going to be good.
And when you go in the hive and do this autopsy, you're looking for specific things that she will lay out in that document. And one thing that I think is interesting to keep in mind during an autopsy and just all year long is being able to identify Varroa mite poop.
Yeah, yeah, a little like white speck kind of stuff.
Yeah, it looks like salt or like sugar, which you need to be careful in case you're like feeding them. Like sometimes if you're feeding them syrup, you can see the sugar crystals in the comb. But this is like little white, salty little white specks, dots along the edge of the inside of the comb. And you can see, Varroa poop.
Our first year in October, we had a hive abscond. And was that the first time we bought the last time we bought a package?
You have that memory of back then and I don't.
Yeah,
I just remember us beekeeping in rain jackets and like we were like wrestlers, like sweating and
yeah,
dying.
We had hot hives because they had all this mite pressure. God. We didn't realize they were so salty.
And then I remember you...
So like anyway, so it's October.
Oh man, I was going to tell a funny story. Well, the one time we were both overheating and there was like this little shade and you went and laid in the shade while I was like dying and then you came back and then, but then Greg was getting stung and he's like, I'm getting stung. I'm like, you need to run. They're all over you. And he goes into the woods because you want to like go by branches so that they like kind of hit them off you. And he just goes running and I can't see him anymore. And then he's like gone for a while and then they see him like zoom past and like another clearing and I'm like hoping he's okay, but I'm like cracking. It was like a movie. I'm cracking up at it.
You need like Benny Hill music playing in the background. Oh, it's funny. Those were the days.
Oh God. I never want to go back to that beekeeping.
Yeah. Now I'm like, all right, the bees are hot. I'm going to put on my full suit and I'm just going to be quick and boom, boom, boom and get out of there and let's be calm and you know, before
takes a while.
Your firearms are useless. Save yourselves. Yeah, and oh man, I like legitimately thought we were gonna pass out a couple times. It was so hot. The bees were also in like full direct sun, and just we did not have any type of breeze mesh to any of our jackets. We just had veils, and then we would cover our arms if they were mean and stingy, and we did that with raincoats and shit.
So dumb, so dumb, so silly. But whatever. That's just something to think about is when you place your bees somewhere, yes, you want it to be good for the bees, but you also want it to be good for the beekeeper.
Yeah. And this document, I mean, it's really, I could just read this document, but it's going to tell you the signs of starvation, the signs of different things. The 1 year, 2 years ago, we had one hive that didn't survive. It was a hell of a year. We were like 9 for 10. And we had done, those were all queens that came from the queen cell program that's a part of our club, and that we had specifically like taken cells, swarm cells from a hive that we loved the queen, and we felt so good about that. But we had one die. It, you know, that's what happens. And we got to the cluster and I was like, I bet the queen's in the center of this.
Oh, she was.
And it was just like a baseball size cluster, and we just peeled the bees away, and then sure enough, boom, right in the dead center was a queen. And I think that was moisture. We figured out that was moisture because there was like, that was the hive in August of 2020 got knocked over.
Yes, that was
flood.
And then it was cracked open. It also got cold.
Yeah, it had a limb fall on it in the wintertime. Felt terrible about that.
I know.
Felt like that was our fault.
It was our fault.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucked.
But yeah, you're going to see tongues are going to be out. You're going to see different things, and it's going to lead you. One thing that a lot of people say is they go like, well, there were no stores. I think they didn't have any stores. Robbing happens. So
right, that's such
you got to look to see, is the comb chewed in a way that it looks sloppy? Jagged chew holes, like where you can tell they just got in there and ripped the cappings open. Is there cappings, you know, little beeswax specks all over the floor of the hive? That's again a sign that they were sloppy and quick about it and it got robbed out. It's pretty rare, unless it's like, you know, middle of winter, you're going to find a hive that has stores left in it that there hasn't robbing hasn't happened.
Unless you close it up.
In a dead out, unless you block the entrances, right.
Which is another reason to maybe block the entrance to, especially if you're a new beekeeper, to really understand like, why did this hive die?
No doubt. That's a very good point. We'll after we do a first inspection, we'll come back here. We'll certainly be talking about what we saw and what our autopsy looked like on the hives that did die. Although none of them died in the wintertime. They all died before the winter. So, you know, we kind of know what happened, but hey, we'll let everybody know what we see.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want that document, like I said, find that Jennifer Lund, or shoot us an email. Anything else? Just like quick autopsy, dead out type stuff, Kara?
I don't think so.
Yeah. It's interesting. It just seems so basic. Like the hive autopsy stuff seems so basic. Like it's pretty black and white, the things you see.
It's easy if you just have to go into it with, okay, I'm going to look. And that's what you have to do every time you go beekeeping. So it's no real different. It's just you're looking for different things this time.
And maybe you go, all right, hive 3 and hive 5 died. Let me look to see where that queen was from. Oh, that was the same shitty queen line. Or hey,
gotta
those were,
take notes.
You know, it's those specific notes that can really, really give you a glimpse into like,
what's the app we use? B+?
B+, yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's like $5 now. I think it was free when we got it. But that it's on, you know, it's just an iPhone. It's pretty easy. It's not cloud-based, which is, I wish it was cloud-based, but it's
I know,
not.
Because like when you take notes on your phone, yeah. I can't see the notes, which is annoying, but.
And then we actually like use the notes section of our phone a lot of times to just keep quick track of like hive one, we're looking for queen emergence, hive two, and I'll make little notes like that, and then I'll send, if Kara's like, hey, I'm going to the hives, I'll send her that.
Yeah.
But it's all like detailed details stored in the app.
Yeah, if you're not taking notes and you're going into this season, I would say have that be a goal. Even if nothing else is your goal this season, notes.
Game change. Notes,
yeah,
is a
take notes.
Total game change.
And you know what? Take notes and keep them.
Yeah.
Year to year.
Yeah.
Don't be like, oh, it's a new year. I'm not going to keep them. Keep them all.
Yeah, for sure. So, all right, what's next? What are we doing right now?
We're saving toilet paper rolls.
Oh, yeah. Dude, the ticks here around us were gnarly last year. Gnarlier than I've ever seen. The property that we're currently at, they were as gnarly as I've seen ever. And they love, ticks love hives. It's like warm crevices that they live in, and I would open a box and see like 3 or 4 ticks like literally in between boxes right there.
We would have to beekeep because we had hives here before we moved here. We would beekeep and then we would go in the bathroom here and we would strip down totally and then have to check each other, and Oh, gross. Yeah,
I get like 6 or 7 ticks on off of them sometimes.
So gross. All right, so tell them about the toilet paper rolls.
So you can buy these expensive toilet like rolls that you put out. We make them ourselves, but we just save toilet paper and
toilet paper rolls.
Toilet paper rolls,
like, and the cardboard paper towel part.
Cardboard, you know, inside. And dip it in beeswax. So I've also started making these little, like, what do you call these things?
Oh, we should talk about that next time with cocktails and crafts. Oh, that's what we should call
cocktails
it.
Cocktails and crafts. All right, I'll sit this one, half of this one I'm in on. No, I'm really digging. I'm making these like bowls with beeswax, and then I do some like dried flowers on them. And then we turned them into little succulent planters.
Yeah.
But whatever. So when I do that, I'm going, next time I do that, I'm going to dip paper towel rolls, cardboard paper towel holder roll things in the beeswax, and that seals them. And then you buy permethrin. I wasn't planning on talking about this, but it starts with a P for sure. And what I'll do is I'll save the lint from our dryer, or you can get just like cotton balls, and you'll spray it. And you got to be careful, wear a mask. You spray it onto the cotton or onto the lint, whatever you're using. You let it dry completely, and then you stuff it into these tubes, and you just put the tubes around where the ticks are. And what it does is the ticks are transported by mice, and the mice will grab and it's not harmful to the mice because it's dried. If it was wet, it would be harmful, but it's dried. They grab the cotton and they bring it into their nests. Or they grab the lint, or they grab the hair, and they bring it into their nests. And then as they're laying at night, the ticks get put in contact with the permethrin, or whatever it's called, and the ticks die, and then the mice go on their way. So mice are actually the ones really transporting ticks all around. People think deer, but it's mice, which is why like foxes, we have chickens, and I like hate seeing foxes, but I'm also like, they're helping the tick population by killing mice.
Permethrin, you're right.
Nice.
So I guess, okay.
We also use.
Could it be harmful to bees?
So it's only harmful to bees when it's wet.
Okay.
So you want to make sure you're letting it completely dry, and you're not spraying it around any hives. But if it's dried and it's on in a tube, and that's another reason why you want to have you don't want just wet cardboard dripping onto it. You want it to sealed up, but, not harmful to them at all.
Okay, great.
Yeah. You can even spray this stuff on your clothes and let them dry. And I know beekeepers that do that. I don't. But you know, if ticks are really, really bad, I get it. There's also something we use in the yard called Tick Kills.
That works.
KILLZ. It's organic.
It's organic, but we, one, like, I think during quarantine, I was like, oh, I'll spray this year. And it has, like, it's natural. And I was like spraying it and inhaling it. And then, like, Craig comes home and I've been doing it for like at least an hour. And I was like, oh, I feel sick. And he was like, well, aren't you wearing, why don't you have a mask on? And I was like, because it's all natural. He's like, no, it's not. You shouldn't be inhaling it.
Yeah, all
like,
natural doesn't mean you can inhale the stuff. It's like, oh.
I felt sick for, like, I kept coughing for days. You're
like blowing and, like, your nose and it.
And the, like the thyme oil kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So wear a mask.
Yeah, it's like concentrated thyme and mint and other carriage.
It works well though.
Yeah. So yeah, we're doing that just because we're trying to get ahead of these ticks. We split every hive that comes out of winter. The bees want to split naturally. That's what they want to do. And we're going to split every hive. There's a notion that some people have that if you're splitting a hive, you're not going to get honey out of either. I very much disagree.
If you split early enough, I feel like that's not a thing.
The only time I tell people you're not getting honey is when they need to build comb. So if you're doing all empty frames and they need to build a ton of wax, you know, you're not expecting a honey crop. But if you have frames, making a split even in May, you're going to be able to get honey. I mean, that's just where we are, how we beekeep, but I don't think that's an issue at all. You can try to make them not swarm. You're going to have to spend so much effort making sure they have room, and you're going to have to be like taking frames and reorganizing and stuff. But really, I think nature's going to win. And if they're good queens, they're going to want to swarm. And they're healthy.
I think we have an episode about swarming. I was trying to look it up really quick.
But yeah,
I don't know which one it is. Sure, also, when you make splits, like drones are an important part of the splits because they have to requeen. You can't,
if you're not seeing a ton of drones, you're not splitting.
Yeah.
You know, because they're going to need to requeen. Exactly.
So again, not by the calendar, but by nature, but drones will start being made when it's warm enough around late March, early April. But you said people are already starting to see some drones.
Yeah, some people were just pictures and cracking boxes, and they were seeing quite a bit of drone larvae.
Yeah, so if there's episode 5 is springtime is swarm time, if you want to listen to it. But if there's drone production now, that's a good sign for your hive. It means
they're healthy. Are
happy, healthy. They have enough food to be able to mm-hmm. sustain and feed the drones.
So, yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not worried about swarming right now. It's snowing out. But hey, when we do have like a warm April and you get like a little bit of a cold stretch and raininess where they're stuck in that hive, they start feeling crowded. They make swarm cells like, whoa. You come out of a little bit of a hint of, you know, warm, 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 few cold, rainy days, warm, warm, warm again. You're going to see a lot of swarm cells. Anyway, we'll talk more about that in a month or two. We're going to split in like late April or early May or whenever we start seeing swarm cells. We even have a kind of methodology we do with certain queens that we want to, spread their genetics where we'll kind of force swarm. So I will not add boxes on purpose so they make swarm cells themselves. We don't graft. We don't do grafting here. That's like nature's graft to me as I force a swarm. But before they're able to even come close to capping the swarm cells, I take the queen and move her, and we do a walkaway split that way. We talk about that, I'm sure, in that swarm episode before, but we'll talk about more of that when we're doing it. But yeah, that's kind of on the horizon. I've been asking my mentees, like, what are you going to do? You're going to have second or third or fourth hive because, our mentees did very good with their bees this year.
Awesome.
I'm so excited for
them.
Yeah,
they did.
They were good. They were good students.
They have like, been did good a good students. Job. From afar, I'm watching and I can tell.
Yeah, I've been very, very happy. But it's like, all right, you got boxes. What are you going to do? Am I taking bees back? What's going on here? So I'm excited. Splits are always something about them I love. I love being able to go back into a hive and then go, oh, there's fresh air.
That's the best.
There's fresh eggs. We got a mated queen. Yes. Like that's how you're making new bees, by the way. You know, we're doing it with queens that you are excited about and genetics. Like, come on. That's the best. I got nothing else.
I got nothing.
Anything cool going on with Kara Joe skincare? Bug repellent. Kara's bug repellent is like her top product.
Yeah.
What do you do the quick elevator? Cause it's.
It's
like jojoba oil.
Yeah. So I take oils and herbs and essential oils, all of which every single ingredient is a bug repellent. So I take, soy and avocado oil and I infuse it with, catnip. A lot of this stuff I grow, lemongrass, rosemary, and then I add andoroba oil to it. And then there's essential oils of eucalyptus, rosemary, geranium, lemongrass, citronella.
I like the way it smells.
There's like one other one I'm missing right now. But yeah, it's like so good for your body, so good for
like
your face.
You can put it on your face and not like that's a big thing I know with a lot of people is like, dude, I used to spray, but I get crushed by mosquitoes. I would spray bug repellent on myself and spray it all over my face and then like sticky. And then I'd go inside for the night and like literally like I have to take a shower because I'm just covered in disgusting bug repellent.
And chemicals.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good stuff. It took me, what, like 2 years?
You?
And then I just,
I was the test subject for this.
But I had to keep like refiguring
formulating.
It. But I actually started adding more essential oils and different things because Greg was like, I think your bug repellent needs ramping up. Remember that like a year ago?
Yeah.
And I like reformulated it a little bit too.
Yeah, juiced it up.
Yeah, it's been really good.
So yeah, you'll be making some large batches of bug repellent soon.
Yeah, I should do that.
But shout out to all the Kara Joe supporters. And some of you listeners have become Kara Joe supporters.
I know,
which
you
is
guys
really
are
cool.
The best. We have great listeners.
Super good.
I love everybody out there.
Shout out to Another Moon Brewing and Matt Moon. This beer is lovely. Hudson, New York, Feast and Floret.
Yeah, and then let's do that cocktail episode.
Yeah, Mike Landers coming at you soon.
Yeah, we'll do that. That'll be fun.
So you know we have a little cocktail episode coming up. Feel free, if you have any questions or have any thoughts, feel free to shoot us a message and be like, hey, I'd love to hear about this. Some listeners have been doing that, which has been pretty cool. Just being like, hey, I love that you talked about this. Here's a question. And it's like a continuous thing I'm seeing. So we're happy to answer.
Let us know.
Holler. Thanks again, y'all. If you got this far,
you're a rock star.
You're a rock star. Cheers. Happy beekeeping. Peace.